And now, a thought from Geico Motorcycle.
It took 15 minutes to take a spirit animal quiz online.
Please be the cheetah. Please be the cheetah.
And learn your animal isn't the cheetah, but the far less appealing blobfish.
Oh, come on.
To add insult to injury, you could have used those 15 blobfish minutes to switch your motorcycle insurance to Geico.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on motorcycle insurance.
The internet can be your window to the world, or an open door that lets cyber criminals in. Online theft, webcam spying, and identity fraud are all on the rise. But you can stay safe with Kaspersky Lab, the world's most awarded internet security. Kaspersky protects your money, privacy, identity, and data with technology perfected over 20 years. So keep exploring. Kaspersky Lab will keep you safe online. Learn more at Kaspersky.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome again to Nerd to the Third Power, your one-stop shop for all things nerdy and awesome. I'm your host and master of ceremonies, Dr. Gonzo. With me, as always, this epic quest of awesomeness is our resident anime goddess, the Cat. Cat, how are you doing this week?
Ooh, I know it's only Tuesday, but man, has it been a week. It's Tuesday when we record, guys. It's Tuesday when we record. I don't know what day
when, you listen. When Monday just kicks your ass so hard that it uses up your quota for the whole week.
I can't believe it.
That Gerald is presenting the quarterly budget report with finger puppets.
Look, here comes a 1.7% decrease in fixed overhead. Hello, everybody.
No, I can't believe how easy it was to save hundreds of dollars on my car insurance with Geico.
Who are you? The projected increase in organic Q3 revenue. Hooray!
Believe it. Geico could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Yeah, you know, I went to the gym for the first time and I don't know how long because I spent the better part of like almost 2 years being sick. So like going to the gym for the first time in a long time kicked my ass.
I'm like, oh, I think I'm going to work out. And the gym's just like, oh, look who decided to show up.
Well, it is just like my little apartment gym. So it's like 3 treadmills, 2 ellipticals, a bike, and like a Bowflex. And all I did was like, I'm just going to walk. I'm going to walk for a little while and then do a little bit of like some arm stuff. And then I haven't slept that well in so long because I was so exhausted after just doing that little. Pretty sad.
Yeah, I know. I know the feeling. I had a similar experience when I started taking up boxing again about a year or so ago because the gym finally opened up in Baltimore. And just my first day's workout, just like, wow, I did not know that your knuckles could actually become tender. So, all right. And Mike Dodd, how are you doing this week? Good to see you again.
Yes, I am well. wish I had something exciting to report. Went to the doctor, still not dead. Though reports of my assimilation have greatly been exaggerated. Just kind of hanging out, working on some video game reviews for This Week in Geek. Currently playing The Division 2 right now. So far, it's pretty good, actually. Though I got called a potato online about it. He's like, you play this game on console, you're a potato gamer. Yes, sir, you are right. I am a spud, but as spud as you could possibly get, because... Man, fuck PC gaming. I suck at aiming. That WDSD crap can't do it. Aim with a mouse can't do it. Whatever. Give me a controller and I'm happy.
Well, you know, Xbox One controllers work on PCs now.
That's true, but then I'm still a potato because I'm using a controller. So, man, you PC master race.
Hey, I'm a PC gamer and I don't use keyboard and mouse either, so.
Okay, thank God, because, like, it's one of those statements where I want to say, you people, and point my finger and get off my lawn.
Down, down boy, down Tonga.
So yeah, that has been my week.
All right, we got a fun show for you guys tonight. Tonight we're discussing Captain Marvel, the latest MCU film. But first, there is procedure to follow, and we didn't get to talk about this last week because of the Critical Role Kickstarter, but we're going to talk about it this week, and that is just the fucking whirlwind that Nintendo has put us through over the last, like, 30 days. Holy shit. Two directs, an announcement that Reggie Fils-Aimé is going to be retiring, and reveals for the new Legend of Zelda and Pokemon games. So, yeah, there's a lot to unpack here. So let's just start up with Birdman. What did you see in those directs that got you really excited? You see anything good?
There was one game. It was right towards the end of the direct. I think the game was called Astral Chain. That looked really cool. I'm thinking, all right, this is really strange. All right, I can dig it. Everything else. Pokemon Sword and Shield, interesting. I don't know whether I'll play it, but if it's a proper Pokemon game, which it will be, I'll probably check it out at some point.
I've already pre-ordered both of them.
I'm probably going to go for Sword because it sounds cooler. I already know my starter will be the stupid rabbit because it's a stupid rabbit. It looks awesome.
I'm picking Score Bunny as well. I'm going to pick the rabbit. I'm going to name him Bugs, and he is going to be a little stinker.
Let me see what else did I see in there. The new Octopath Traveler prequel. That sounds pretty neat. Because I missed it the first time around, I'm going to borrow it from my friend Alex, so I might get a chance to try Octopath before the prequel comes out. Some thoughts on Reggie retiring. Never thought I'd see it. Truth be told, I thought he'd ride it until retirement. But the fact that he's like, hey, it's time to go, kind of caught me by surprise. I love how his successor is named Doug Bowser. Like, literally, you could not have named that kid any better. So I'm curious to see what Reggie's going to do next. He definitely was the best public face of Nintendo for a very long time. He definitely made the corporation feel wholesome. It didn't feel like evil Bobby Kotick and Activision or the dickhead who runs EA. It made Nintendo just seem friendly. Like, Reggie's the type of guy...
More Stan Lee, less Ike Perlmutter.
Yeah, like, it seemed like the type of guy you could walk up to on the street and say, hey, I'm really excited, and he genuinely would engage you in a conversation. So, those are my quick thoughts.
Okay, so my thoughts on the direct. I absolutely went ham on the Yoshi's Crafted World demo because I'm a huge Yoshi's Island fan, and this new game, I cannot wait for it to come out. It's so adorable, guys. You have no idea, and like, I can't wait for that. Also got the Daemon X Machina demo, which I'm having a lot of fun with. Astral Chain, I'm keeping an eye on that. I've been really impressed with all the games from Platinum that I've played so far, most especially Nier Automata. So I'm interested to see what they do with Astral Chain.
They were the same people who did Transformers Devastation, weren't they?
Yeah, that was another game they did, which I've also played and is a load of fun. The one that really just blew me away and surprised me was the Link's Awakening remake. Holy shit, like when they started playing that animated intro, I'm watching, I'm just like, I think I know what this is, but I'm scared to say it because I'm afraid that if I do, it will disappear. So, but yeah, it looks like I can't wait for that because Link's Awakening was the first Zelda game that I actually owned and beat myself. So this is going to be like, going back to my childhood. Pokemon Sword and Shield was a little disappointed that we didn't see more in the direct, but that's probably going to be Nintendo's big E3 thing this year, so we'll probably see more of it then. Some questions that I have. One, how are they going to implement the multiplayer? Is it going to require a paid Switch Nintendo Online subscription, or is it going to be free out of the box? And two, how are they going to handle the transfer of Pokemon from the 3DS games to the Switch? Because this is the first time that we've had to transfer games from a handheld to a home console, even though the Switch can technically double as a handheld. So, like I said, I was left with a lot of questions, but the game looks spectacular. I love the visuals, and I can't wait to actually get my hands on it because I've kind of gotten bored with Let's Go Pikachu. As far as Reggie retiring, I mean, yeah, it's kind of like, wow, it's weird that it's affected me as much as it has, because it's like, don't know. It's kind of like you know, the whole announcement with Alex Trebek that Alex Trebek put out last week, except without the cancer. It's kind of those things. Just like, you know, he just became such a fixture of the company that you can't really imagine Nintendo without him.
Yeah, so. this Doug Bowser has such huge shoes to fill, not just in terms of his corporate responsibilities, but in terms of being the front forward face of the company. He has to be that ambassador of goodwill.
Yeah. So, you know, but you know, we wish you the best, Reggie. You know, enjoy your, and you know, we look forward to see what Bowser does. God, never thought I'd say that. All right, so yeah, sound off on the. What are some of the things that Nintendo's putting out that you're excited for? What are you looking forward to? And so, with that, we are going to jump now into Ask a Geek, and let's see here. Now we got some questions here. Let me dig a few up here. All right, okay. Here's a question here, and we actually got first one here specifically for you, Mike.
Oh,
yes. This is a question from a fan of yours from Terrible Warriors. His name is Ray, and he asked, "What is your favorite tabletop gaming system that you've played?"
Favorite tabletop gaming system that I played. My favorite to play in is Shadowrun Second Edition, which was an old FOSSA property. It's now held by Catalyst Game Labs, and I don't much care for what they've done with the system, but it's definitely modern gaming, which makes a lot more sense. I'm just very stubborn in my ways. The system I like running the most is actually D&D 5th edition, because it runs so smooth, and if you don't want to use miniatures, you don't have to. That was a big thing that 4th edition tried to shove down your throat, was minis, and 3.5 edition with like Pathfinder. But yeah, my system that's the favorite to play, Shadowrun 2nd edition, to run D&D 5th, and then honorable mention Pathfinder, because it's just such a wonderful world with such exquisitely done splat books, like in terms of a bestiary, add-ons you can do with the game. That game is so modular, I love it. And I guess another honorable mention would be Battletech and MechWarrior, back in the clan invasion days, just because the lore for that was so badass. So, yeah, those are my answers, and I'm sticking.
Okay. Kat, let me open this question up to you. Have you played multiple gaming systems or just D&D? And if so, do you have a favorite?
I have played D&D and I've played Pathfinder. And that's almost the same thing. There's a lot of differences, but yeah.
Okay.
There's nothing. I don't have a big variety. I like one thing and that's it.
Now, to kind of piggyback on that, now is that just because you dig fantasy settings, or are you just having a chance to be introduced to anything else?
Well, because it's really like I'd never really played any kind of like tabletop games until like college, and then it was just me and some friends played D&D, and then I didn't play again for like a decade, and then I get back together or with some people who actually want to play, and it's Pathfinder. But I didn't really dig Pathfinder that much, and I super didn't dig Pathfinder 2.0 when it launched for beta test. So my Pathfinder group turned into a D&D 5e group, and my 5e group has remained a 5e group. And other than that, I do not have enough people who actually play games in my life. Like, I know tons of people who play, but trying to find, like, a dedicated group to sit down and actually, like, play regularly, nigh on impossible for a bunch of adults.
Yeah.
As totally we all should know.
Yeah, looking for a group is the ultimate moment for all of us.
Yeah. So it's a little of, I haven't had enough exposure to other things, but also I'm really happy with 5e. And if I were to try some other game kind of thing, I'd really want to play Vampire the Masquerade like a true fucking nerd. And then, but I don't really need it. I don't need it. I'm happy with what I have.
Okay.
I will keep you in mind. If you guys ever want to play a Vampire, I will play the old 90s edition, which is not... Don't play 5e. Don't play the new Vampire the Masquerade, kids. There's entire Reddit threads as to why.
So here's one here from Paul, and he's got a question, Kat. And his question is, what is your favorite decade for anime?
Oh, like, shit. The 90s, like, anime. of course, 90s anime, which, when you think about it, is a terrible decade for anime. Like, right now, the stuff that's getting put out in the 2010s is unbelievably good in terms of quality and speed and the rate at which we're getting dubs. And
the variety.
Yeah, and the variety and the way in which, you know, we can stream it all and it's moving to dubs immediately. We're simul-dubbing. This is the time to be an anime fan. But I was an anime fan back in the 90s. And that, to me, it's a nostalgia thing more than anything else. From what I know about anime fans, you will always be the biggest fan of the decade that you started. So, you know, like young people are like, Naruto was my starter anime. And I'm like, okay, so that's the generation of shows that they enjoy. But I started on 90s anime and a bit of 80s anime. So 90s will always be my favorite. There's just something about the style that I just really find endearing. I love the pack of voice actors that was around at that time. Both terrible English dubs and wonderful Japanese versions. You know, just there was a couple of voice actors. You heard them in everything. It brought you a sense of comfort. Not all dubs in the 90s were terrible, but many of them were terrible.
You know what's a weird thing that I've always thought was really cool about 90s anime, and you're probably going to think this is really fucking strange, but the kind of almost sketch look of the line art from those days.
Yeah, no, that's one of the things I really like about the 90s style is it had, you know, depending on the show, but it had like harder, thicker lines, slightly like looser lines.
And it actually looked hand-drawn.
Yeah, because it was, you know. And getting cells from that era is like, it's such a fun thing to try and find cells and stuff like that. And you still get some of that look today, but today it's like super deliberate, you know? It's not the standard anymore. Everything today is much cleaner. I feel like a lot of stuff today has like thinner, lighter lines. It has much better colors today. Because back then, most of the shows that you'd get would have like really bright color palettes, kind of harsh color palettes almost. Mm-hmm. We just ate that shit up, man, because it was all we had. Like, there was no like, oh, what am I gonna watch? It's like
what does the guy in the trench coat around the corner have this week?
Exactly. It's like there's 20 anime available, and you have to buy them on VHS, and you don't get to, you can't even read on the internet what they're about before you go into it. There's no reviews. It's like, oh, the back of the VHS says that this A Tattoo Master, for example, was a VHS that I bought with no information about it at all. And I was like, okay, well, this is what I'm buying now because this is the only thing that's available and it doesn't look like porn. And then usually, even though it didn't look like porn, it probably was.
All right. Okay. So thank you for your question, Paul. And now I've got one here from John. And this is, I'm going to apologize in advance if I go on a bit of a tear, but this is something that I'm really kind of passionate about. And I'm also going to apologize, John, if my answer sounds like I'm angry at you. I'm not. But like I said, this is a question that kind of gets me riled up. And his question, he writes, I just started getting into retro game collecting last year. And something that I have heard from many people who've been in the hobby for many years is this sentiment that this new blood entering into the hobby is ruining retro game collecting. Have you heard this, Gonzo, and what are your thoughts? And so since you asked, these are my thoughts. And if I go on a tear, I apologize. So Cat and Birdman, you may want to put on the helmets that I've thoughtfully provided for you underneath your seats. I've never liked the idea of gatekeeping for any hobby. And a lot of this sentiment that you hear about new people ruining the hobby, a lot of the people that are saying that are kind of ironically people like me who've been collecting for many years. And on the one hand, I can kind of see why people are saying that, because if you wind the clock back 10 years ago, which is when I started getting serious into retro game collecting, games were, by and large, a lot cheaper back then. You could buy a copy of Super Mario Brothers for the NES for like $3. Now, there were some games that were ridiculously expensive back then that are cheaper now. Like, for example, one of the retro stores that I went to back then and still go to now, Back then, they would sell a copy of Earthbound for $800. Not brand new, not complete in box, just the cartridge, $800. For reference, the copy of Earthbound that I bought at that same store last year, I only paid $84. But the reason why people would charge those prices was because, you know, they would be the nine times out of ten, they'd be the only game in town. You couldn't go anywhere else. You know, there, you know, games weren't being traded on eBay as much. There weren't as many retro stores back then. And the ones that did exist were getting shut down because this is about the time when GameStop was starting to really pick up steam, and they were basically steamrolling all the competition. You know, I've talked before about the play-in trade that used to be in Olney, Maryland 10 years ago that I used to go to, where they knew me so well, I'd walk in the door, they'd have fucking, like, cans of soda there waiting for me, because I never went in there and spent less than $200 on a single trip. You know, but, you know, part of the things that really irritates me about people saying that, oh, you know, all these, you know, the retro collecting is ruined now, it's just categorically not true, okay? You know, yeah, I miss the days where I could buy, you know, spend $100 and walk out with, like, you know, a big box of like 50 games. I'm not going to lie. But at the same time, there are so many more retro stores out now that exist, and they're run by people who know what they're talking about and are passionate about gaming and passionate about the hobby. And they're not just old men in a flea market somewhere trying to milk people for money, you know, for their nostalgia. There are people who actually know what they're selling. You've got companies like 8BitDo, RetroBit, Castle Mini Games coming out with new accessories and hardware to keep these games playable. Like Birdman, you and I were talking before the show that I was testing out that Pound HD Link cable for my PlayStation 2 that just arrived yesterday. You know, so you have all these companies now coming out with new stuff to support this hobby and keep, you know, these games playable and you know, able to play them in new ways. And there are so many, you know, retro YouTubers out there, Metal Jesus, Radical Reggie, Kelsey Lewin. You know, you have all these people getting in, you know, talking about the hobby and bringing so many more people into it. That's not a hobby that's dying to me. That's a hobby that's thriving. You know, I would say kind of in a similar vein to Kat, that now is the time to be an anime nerd. Now is the time to be a retro collector. And, you know, I love all these new people getting into the hobby because it's more people that I can talk to. It's more people that I can, interact with and learn from. And, you know, we're sharing knowledge and we're able to, you know, it's like, oh, yeah, you like this store? Well, there's another store down here that's really cool. Or, you know, here's a game that you might not have heard of that you may want to try and track down and get a load of. You know, I love all this new blood. One of the things that I'm really, that I see that really kind of warms the cockles of my cold black heart is people my age, you know, coming into these retro stores with their kids and getting them into the hobby and sharing, you know, gaming with them. And, you know, again, that doesn't speak to me of a hobby that's dying. That speaks to me of a hobby that's thriving and growing. Now, will the bubble burst a few years down the line? Maybe. But for now, retro collecting is more alive than it has ever been. And it makes me so upset to hear people say that new people come into the hobby is ruining it, or that retro gaming is dying. And it's not true. It isn't. There's never been a better time to be a retro game collector.
I think the time of finding deals is long dead, though.
If you ever come down my way, I'll show you how to find.
Well, I'm saying you're not going to go to a flea market and you're not going to walk out with like a box of games for like $20. Those days are long dead. The market has evened itself out. People know what they have, or people are sometimes overvaluing what they have, and they'll charge you eBay prices. That's one thing I've noticed with the retro hobby, and the fact that's what drove me out of the hobby was the market, because it was too expensive to keep up with. Now, if you're not a completionist, yeah, it's a friggin' fantastic time to be in. Because I can't imagine someone going for a complete NES collection right now, unless you're like Mr. Moneybags or whatever. Good luck. It's not impossible, though, but good luck. But it is a neat time to get into all these retro consoles, because more people are putting stuff out on eBay. There are more retro stores available. Emulation has never been better if you want to experience the games but don't have the money to. So yeah, you're right. It's not a bad time to be in it now. You're right. The bubble is eventually going to come to burst. I think it's coming sooner as opposed to later. But enjoy the paradise while it lasts now. Because it's going to be fun for a while.
You and I can fight off air about that. But apologies for running a little long on that. But yeah, that's my answer to your question, John, is no, I don't think retro gaming is ruined. I don't think it's dying. So, so that's all the Ask Geek questions that we have for this week. Thank you, as always, for sending them in. As always, you can send them to us through the email at drgonzo@nerdofthethirdpower.com. We love reading your questions on the air. We love getting them. So, yeah, get your questions in, and you might just get yours read on the air. And with that, we are going to jump right into the meat of this episode, which is Captain Marvel, the new Marvel Cinematic Universe movie that just came out last Friday. So it's going to be a lot of fun. We've all had a chance to see it, and we're going to take our time to discuss our thoughts. So, Kat, why don't we start with you? What are your general thoughts on Captain Marvel?
Of course, I was super excited going into the film, not just because it has a cat in it, but that was a very exciting portion of it.
Goose is the new Rocket.
Seriously, though. And it was really exciting to see something that is going to lead into the next Avengers film to... You know, they're introducing somebody who's going to be in the Avengers film so late into the game. To see a movie that you knew was going to rely heavily on CG, especially in the de-aging of several actors. And something that was primarily aliens, I thought was going to be all really interesting additions into the MCU. And I was not disappointed. All of these things happened and they were all great.
Okay, Mike, what about you? General thoughts?
General thoughts, I thought it was all right, actually. I mean, I knew this was a time capsule movie that takes place in the 90s. I was curious to see how they'd handle the Skrulls and the Kree. They're two of my favorite alien races in Marvel, so I was curious to see how they'd handle them both. Genuinely very surprised by it, actually. Try not to give too much away. Other than that, soundtrack was surprisingly on point. Goose is probably my new favorite side character in the MCU. In fact, I actually have a friend of mine is making me Captain Marvel posters with all three of my cats. One of them has passed away, but he'll still get framed on the wall. So yeah, we're going to get those done up as prints, which I think will be pretty neat. I thought the de-aging on Nick Fury was fantastic. Like, that should be up for an Academy Award later on next year. That's how good I thought it was. Other than that, the film for me was about a 7 out of 10. I thought the first half of the movie was kind of slow, but once you got to Earth, it really kept a nice, steady pace and thought it was fantastic. Oh,
all right. Well, for me, I enjoyed the film. It was a really fun popcorn movie. There were some problems with the script and the plot pacing that I had some issues with, but we'll get into that as we start discussing the film and its component parts. But on the whole, it was an enjoyable film, and I had fun with it. So with that, this is the part of the show where we break the film down to its component parts. So let's start first by discussing the plot. So Kat, do you want to give the plot synopsis for this film?
Sure, because I'm ever good at these. So the story is there is a young woman who is Kree, in quotation mark, and she is on a mission with her Kree companions to root out these Skrulls. And the Kree and the Skrulls are big bad enemies. They don't like each other. There's like a whole bunch of comics about it. Endless comics about it.
Hatfields and McCoys with lasers.
And various shades of blood. So they don't like each other. They're on a mission to go, take out these Skrulls who are encroaching on their territory, because Skrulls bad, Kree good. And Veers is this awesome, cool chick, but she has missing memories that she is mildly concerned about and gets increasingly concerned about when stuff happens and she ends up on Earth. Let's just skip over to the stuff that doesn't matter. And she ends up on Earth. And this is, as we already stated, this is the 90s. So, of course, she lands inside a Blockbuster next to a Radio Shack. And she's trying to find out more information both about, like, these memories that she's having of Earth and where the Skrulls are and their invasion plans of Earth that she assumes exist. And she gets
gets entangled with Nick Fury.
I was going to say, she ends up on the radar of Nick Fury, younger Nick Fury, and Phil Coulson. So she kind of gets entangled with S.H.I.E.L.D., and stuff happens. It's a lot of stuff.
Yeah, she winds up basically teaming up with Nick Fury to try and determine why the Skrulls have come to Earth. And it's later revealed that they are after faster-than-light technology, which was actually developed by Avers's old human mentor back when she was Carol Danvers' Air Force pilot, who turned out to be a Kree scientist who was trying to find a way to end the war between the Kree and the Skrulls. And not in a kill-em-all kind of way, but in a kind of, okay, give the Skrulls an out sort of way, because it's revealed that actually throughout the whole war, the Skrulls are the ones who are getting beat down on, and they're on the run, and they're just trying to GTFO to find a home to live in peace in. And Veers winds up teaming up with the leader of the Skrulls named Talos, winds up getting her memories back after a visit to an old human friend of hers, and we learned that the core that powered the fashion light technology that her mentor was developing was actually the Tesseract. Which was a neat little call forward to the first Avengers movie. And so like I said, stuff happens. There's lots of whiz bang boom. The Kree run home with their tails between their legs. And Captain Marvel winds up going after them to bring an end to the war. And then lots of whiz bang boom stuff. And then of course there's a stinger at the end where we see Carol Danvers come back to Earth. Answering the summons that Nick Fury sent out at the end of Avengers Infinity War. So, let's start discussing some. So, what did you guys think of the plot and script of this movie? So, Kat, why don't you go first?
To be honest, I didn't know a whole lot about what the story was going to be. I kind of thought it was going to be like, oh, here's this chick who's an Air Force pilot and goes into space. And I was more in the plot of the Green Lantern film that was terrible, but I did still see. Where she was gonna find out she was part Kree and go off into space and have space adventures. And I totally should have flip-flopped that, because that was not accurate at all. I took the wrong things away from the trailers. but I really enjoyed it. I liked that it started off in space and then it got smaller, like the setting got smaller. Because as we've said over and over on our show, that Marvel has an escalation problem where they keep having to blow up bigger and bigger things, because, you know, once you blow up a city, now you have to put the world in danger. And once you put the world in danger, now you have to put the universe in danger.
And then where do you go from there?
Yeah. So this was nice because it started off, oh, here's some space war and intergalactic shit. And then we bring it home and we bring it to something smaller and more meaningful. So I really liked that aspect of it. I thought the script was pretty good. I didn't have any problems with it. I've heard people say that they had problems with it, but I mean, there was like a couple little things that there was like one thing that just didn't fit for me, but that was it.
Well, what was that thing?
It was the how Nick Fury got his scar.
Yeah, that was kind of a cop out. Me too. Yeah.
If only because I after the film, I literally went back and rewatched Winter Soldier, which I believe is the only film where you actually see his eye.
Yeah.
And the scarring doesn't match up at all. It's like, it's not the right kind of wound and all that stuff. But you know, it was like 2 hours and 3 minutes of Nick Fury cuddling a cat. So I'll take it.
Okay. Birdman, what about you? Thoughts on the script and plot?
I thought the first, I thought the early stuff in like maybe the first 20 minutes, half hour of the movie was a little slow. I don't like Yon Rogg as a villain. He feels a little small scale. And then again, the MCU has always had a problem with its villains. It has very few good ones and a bunch of mediocre ones. I'm really kind of surprised I didn't see the Supreme Intelligence in its true form, which kind of pissed me off as an old school Kree fan. I wanted my green giant blob thing because I thought that would have been cool, but and net betting is kind of hot, so I'm okay with this.
They gotta save the Supreme Intelligence for another film.
Yeah, so I'm okay with not seeing Green Blob yet, but again, a net betting hot. So moving on, I want to say, like I said, once I got to Earth, I really enjoyed it. I wish there was a little more Coulson, but you know what? He's got Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. if you really want to see more of that.
His de-aging BTW was unbelievable. Like, as good as Samuel Jackson's was, Coulson almost looked like a different person.
I thought it was for just a second.
Because his hairline was different, and that makes all the difference in the world.
Let me see, what else did I think about? Script-wise, one of the criticisms I've heard about this movie is how Carol gets her powers is kind of weak, but I'm like, no different than Scarlet Witch, no different than Quicksilver, no different than Vision, what's the big deal? She got powered by an Infinity Stone, who gives a shit? So I'm okay with it, though the explosion was kind of funny. I was the only person in the theater to laugh when that happened, because I was like, ha! I did almost write this off as discount Green Lantern at one point, but then when Carol goes Super Saiyan right at the end of the movie, I was like, okay, this just turned wicked. Because she was like Goku-ing everything, and it was so cool. One of the moments I liked the most is where she's talking to the daughter of her friend, who will later become an Avenger if they follow the through line, because she's Monica Rambeau, who eventually becomes Photon and Miss Marvel in her own right. But anyway, I like how they were playing with the costume colors, and you're referencing different costumes from the comics. And I thought that was super neat and super cool. Then when she finally lands upon the red, the blue, and the gold, I was like, that just made this fucking for me. That was so cool. Okay. But overall, like I said, I didn't think it had that many problems.
All right. Well, I guess it's my turn. And like I said, the script and plot had some issues for me. Nothing deal breaking, but definitely enough to that I could see that there's some really baffling decisions made in the film. One of my chief problems with the film, and this is I'm trying to think of a way that I can have this make sense, but it felt like it was trying too hard to be cool, if that makes any real sense. Like, you ever have that friend who they tell you, you have to see this one movie because it's so totally awesome, but then you sit down and you agree to sit down and watch with them, but then throughout the whole movie, they're going, okay, watch this. This is the awesome part. This is when the hero goes whiz, bang, boom, and explosions happen. And you're like, just shut up and let me watch the movie. I felt like, for the first like half of this movie, that the movie was on my shoulder going, okay, now watch this. This is totally cool. And I'm like, you've already got my money. I'm here watching the movie. You know, you don't need to try so hard. And I think a lot of that had to do with some really kind of baffling story decisions. Like, I like that they tried to do something different with how they tell origin stories. They did kind of a flashback style where we don't really get the full, we don't open with, you know, Carol on Earth and how she gets her powers. We get all that kind of in flashback. But the problem is, to me at least, we don't see enough of those flashbacks. So, like, for example, one of the things that they keep showing us is like flashes of Carol's childhood where, you know, we get like, you know, she's driving a go-kart and the boy tells her, oh, you know, you should be driving slow, or, you know, she's getting knocked down on the beach as a little girl. But the problem is we just see these short flashes, and we don't really see how these events affect her. So when she has that nevertheless she persisted moment near the end of the movie, it kind of feels like it wasn't really earned, because we don't really see how any of this really affected Carol in her development. And then another thread that runs throughout the film is her mentor saying, oh, you have to control your emotions because if you let them get the better of you, they'll destroy you. But we never see anything in the film that shows her quote unquote getting emotional as being either hindrance or a help. So it's kind of like it never really goes anywhere with it. Although I do have to say, I did love the why don't you just shoot him moment at the end of the movie, where he's like, okay, you know, I'm so proud of you. You know, you learned to master your... Now come at me. And she just blasts and was like, fuck you. I'm not playing by your rules. So I thought that was really cool. But like I said, it's interesting that a film that's been pushed back so many times feels kind of rushed as far as its script goes. And I will bet you dollars to donuts that there's going to be an extended DVD that's going to have more stuff about Carol's backstory. I really like the whole Skrull plot. The guy who played Talos just absolutely sold that whole plot line. And I admit I have limited knowledge of the Skrulls because I wasn't really that big into comics, but I've always heard of them as being like big villains. Like they had the whole secret invasion thing a few years ago where the Skrulls basically took over the Earth. So it was really neat to see the whole Kree versus Skull thing kind of turned on its head. And I also liked a bunch of the little call forwards to previous Marvel films. Like, I love that Ronan the Accuser was the big Skrull baddie from Guardians of the Galaxy. I love that we got to see him before he went all, you know, crazy zealot, power stone mad. I like the Tesseract plot. I liked it was interesting to see how Fury got a hold of it. And on that note, the interactions between Fury and Carol in this movie, I mean, like, Samuel L. Jackson, Brie Larson, like I decided I could watch those two in any movie made because like the chemistry those two had in this film was just off the charts, and I absolutely loved seeing them interact.
It was like a buddy cop movie, and I loved that.
It really was. But like I said, these are issues that I've had with the plot. But like I said, none of these were deal breakers. And by the end of when the movie was done, like I said, I had a lot of fun with this movie, and I really liked some of the things that they did. There were some issues I had, but on the whole, I mean, it like I said, it's a fun popcorn film. So that's the plot and script out of the way. So now let's move on to the presentation of this film. So what did you guys think of the effects and visuals and sound of this movie?
Gorgeous. Just gorgeous.
Can't wait to hear the Blu-ray mix on this, actually.
Oh, man. like I said before, like, you knew going in that it had to be very, like, CGI special effects heavy, just due to the nature of Carol's powers, and knowing that it was going to be set in a time period, you know? There was, like, you knew going in there was going to be all this de-aging and everything, and we know from... It's really cool that we've gotten to see Marvel movies get better at de-aging. Because this was... In no way was the de-aging process Uncanny Valley at any time. Except when you're sitting there going, is that Coulson? That's way too much hair for Coulson.
Yeah, I had a similar moment with as Birdman did, where Coulson appeared on screen. I was like, is that Coulson? That can't be. It must have got a different actor. But then he starts talking, and I'm like, Paul! Excuse me, Phil!
Phil!
Paul!
Phil! Yeah, so, like, that all was really great. My favorite bits of CGI were when Carol was going Super Saiyan. And particularly, I loved when she had her helmet on, and her hair was in, like, that friggin' awesome, like, glowing mohawk. Because, like, one of my fears going into the film was, like, that looks weird. You know, just seeing that from, like, the stills and from the comic, and I was like, this just looks like it's going to be really strange and abnormal for a superhero costume. And then I saw it in action. I'm like, no, this is a fucking cool. This is great. I love her costume and going Super Saiyan and just glowing. And, oh, it was so cool. The cat, however, had a lot of Uncanny Valley.
Really?
Yeah, it's mostly because I've been a cat owner since I was, like, 7 years old. I know what a fake cat looks like. There was a lot of CGI cat in there. And most of the time, I'm like, it's fine. They can't do this because, like, the SPCA or PETA or somebody will, like, they'll be there and they'll be watching and they'll be like, you can't do that. Like, just,
you know,
like, picking the cat up by its scruff and stuff.
You know, a moment that in the film that I kind of had to raise my eyebrows at regarding the cat. It's the first time they take the Quinjet, the prototype Quinjet, up into the air, and they're like, "Oh, we've got a stowaway." And you see the cat splayed out against the crate. I'm just looking at it and I'm going, "Oh God, that poor cat's all four of its shoulders are now broken."
Yeah,
because I don't think a cat can actually do that.
I don't know. but there, like, a lot of the cat was just CGI, and that sort of bothered me, because there was definitely scenes where it was CGI'd, but it didn't need to be CGI'd. Like, you could have had a real cat just sitting there. And then when I watched the credits, there was like six cats. And I was like, why did you need so many cats for something that was 90% CG'd? But I don't know. I'm not a filmmaker. But otherwise, I thought the film was gorgeous. Like Birdman said, the music. We'll probably talk more about the music later.
Well, no, we're talking presentation, so music now.
Usually music gets its own category, but music. Oh my God. What a soundtrack.
I actually have it pulled up on Spotify right now, currently followed by 70,000 people. And it's got some amazingly deep cuts from the 90s, too. So I'm just looking through it. Some examples on here that we have. There was the Nirvana was in it. That was obvious. But we also have Weezer's Buddy Holly was in it. Rebel Girl by Bikini Kill. Garbage Only Happy When It Rains. I remember that song specifically. Ready to Go by Republica. Waterfalls by TLC I thought was kind of a fun choice. The Just a Girl fight sequence I thought was actually kind of fun. Mm-hmm. And I think this soundtrack will be almost as memorable as Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 1 was. Because that had an amazing soundtrack.
You know what? The cat is going to find this hysterical because she always gives me shit for being the only one to notice the music. But I did not notice the soundtrack at all until the I'm Just a Girl fight sequence. And that's only because I absolutely hate that song. I hated it released, and I hated it. I don't know what it is. Just something about it just drives me up the wall. I think it was because when it first came out, it got played like everywhere.
Yeah.
It like was
MTV
it
MTV way overplayed.
Yeah. So, but outside of that, I didn't really notice the soundtrack at all. That's just me.
For once, I did. Besides, like the vocal soundtracks and stuff, there was bits and pieces, especially towards the end, that I thought were a bit Avengers-y or a bit Captain America-y. There was just like, I don't know. I think towards the end there was like a climax song that something.
I want to see who did the composure for this,
because you know, like typically. There might be some hints to other Marvel films in the score, and there was definitely one that had a couple of beats that sounded like the Avengers music to me.
Okay.
And it was probably just my imagination.
Alrighty.
So the person who did the music for this was, or the composer, was Pinar Toprak, and I'm just seeing what they've done most notably. Wow, they did music for Fortnite, if you can believe that. In terms of film stuff that's worth mentioning, they actually haven't done a lot of big things actually. So this was wow.
This is the breakout.
Biggest thing the biggest thing they did was Justice League, and that was additional music. And just a bunch of smaller projects. In terms of television, we'll see if they've done anything major. No, they've done music for Krypton.
Okay,
that's their big claim the fam.
All right. Well, we've discussed the presentation, and so let's talk about the category that we kind of skipped over, and that's the cast. So, Kat, what did you think of the cast of this movie?
You were talking about Talos, is it Talos or Talos?
Talos, I think.
I think it's Talos, but I swear I heard it pronounced both ways in the movie. So, okay. Take your pick.
Well, one of these is a dude in Skyrim. It's just a god, whatever. But he was played by Ben Mendelsohn, and I had remembered seeing, like, ages ago that Ben Mendelsohn was going to be in this film, and when I looked on Wikipedia, it was, like, you know, listed as the Skrull character, and I'm like, oh, he's playing a bad guy, because that's all he does is play bad guys, and he's really good at playing bad guys, and then when I went in, I had forgotten that he was going to be in it, so I was watching, and I was like, who is this guy? Why does he look so familiar?
Can I just I'm sorry, go ahead.
And then he went into his Skrull form and then was using his actual accent. And I'm like, oh, duh, it's Ben Mendelsohn. He's amazing. And he ended up being like one of the best characters to come out of that film by far.
Can I say his ability to emote in that heavy Skrull makeup was great?
Yeah. And it was definitely like it said hours of makeup to get him into makeup. So for him to be all layered up. And like, hey, good on them for practical effects and not CGI-ing some face on him or something. Just but, nice practical makeup.
But like, so many times when, with those heavy, you know, heavy makeup effects, you know, character faces are kind of static and you don't really get to see them emote all that much. But he was able to sell that character so well. I'm really interested to see like the actual application of the of that makeup and his ability to, because his ability to perform through it was just amazing. I again want to give a shout out to the interactions between Brie Larson and Samuel L. Jackson in this movie. Just seeing these two just bounce off of each other was just great. And like I said, if they're ever in a movie again together, I'm definitely gonna go see it, because like it's clear that these two had a blast working together.
One of the most powerful things that I think Brie Larson did is she took the embodiment of the role and really made it her own. Much like when you think of Chris Evans, that's Captain America. When you think of Brie Larson, that's Captain Marvel now. Like, you just associate, like, it was so well cast and the role was so well portrayed. It just works. And that's, if Marvel has done anything right, whoever's in charge of their casting has done a 9 out of 10 job for almost every movie. Almost everything works.
Yeah, and to kind of loop back on what I said about the script, that's one of the reasons why I'm kind of bummed about the problems ahead that exist in the script, because like I could see where, like, you know, like you said, Brie Larson absolutely owned this role, and I could see like where if those script problems hadn't been there, like she would have been able to just hit a grand slam with this. But it's kind of like it kind of felt like she said in the movie, like she was fighting with one hand tied behind her back, with the script issues. So, but I'm really interested to see where she takes the role from here, because like you said, she absolutely embodied the role. So, Kat, what about you? What do you think of Brie Larson?
Oh, I thought she was great, and I honestly haven't seen Brie Larson in anything, I think, except Scott Pilgrim.
She was in Scott Pilgrim?
Oh, yeah, she was Evil Ex number 3, I think. No, she was...
She was Scott's ex, the singer for the band.
The Clash at...
Knives?
Singer. Yeah, no. The blonde chick.
Okay, I'm going to have to go look this up.
The blonde chick who's in a band, and yeah. Yeah, so her. That's what I remember, is her singing... whatever that song was, Black Sheep, I think is the name of the song. That's like the image I have in my head, is her with the ponytail and the fierce outfit and everything. And for her to just be like more of an everyday kind of girl appearance, like she's got her hair down. She's, you know, she looks kind of like normal and not like a super diva. So this is a big change over. And her not playing a colossal bitch like she was in Scott Pilgrim. So great. So again, I don't know very much about her body of work, but now that I've seen these two things, I'm like, wow, she's got some versatility. This is great. And I watched a lot of her stuff leading up to this, because she would post a lot of stuff from like her workouts. And she is the most adorable person ever. They would show her like doing these crazy, like bench pressing some really heavy shit and then being fed a cookie as a reward. And you're like, oh no, this is too adorable. Oh no. So like, I knew going in I was going to like her, and I'm glad they gave her room to be the character, and, you know, didn't try to make... they didn't try and force something on her. It really felt like a very natural character for her to play.
Okay, let me pull up a cast list here, because I want to make sure I get this guy right.
Who's the character?
The mentor character.
Yon Rogg.
Okay, Jude Law. Okay.
Jude Law.
Yeah.
All right. I'll tell you a character that I didn't really buy into, and this was something that I think you mentioned earlier in the show, and that was Jude Law as Yon Rogg. I felt like he was a really just a weak fucking villain. And I don't know, maybe that was just, that was kind of the point. But I don't know, just it's again, it's one of those problems that I have with the script, because he's the one who drives that whole, oh, your emotions get the best of you and destroy you thing that they do absolutely nothing with throughout this whole movie. So I felt like he was just kind of there. I really feel like if they wanted to go with a great villain route, I really think they should have done more with Ronan the Accuser, because Jude Law just there was really no point to him in this movie, I felt, but that's just me.
You know, like, you're not wrong. Like, the whole Yon Rogg thing, he's supposed to be this guy who's supposed to be, I have a divine purpose, I'm supposed to do all these cool things, and in the end he's like, hi, I'm Jude Law with fucked up lenses in my eyes. It felt so flat when everything else in the movie is firing so well. Like the final confrontation where she shoots him in the face was hilarious, but that should have been a big character moment, and it just kind of was.
Yeah, but again, that loops back to script problems that I had.
Yeah.
Kat, you were about to say something?
I think it's really funny that you were talking about how Ronan the Accuser should have been a big bad because he fell so flat in his own film for a lot of people. I like Ronan the Accuser, but a lot of people didn't like him as a villain because, again, Marvel has a problem with villains. So, like, they could have made Ronan a really big villain in this film, and we would have heard people going, you know, people would have had a problem, is all I'm saying. Because people, no one will ever be happy unless it's Loki. Like, period, is the only villain that we all universally like.
I like Ultron.
Ultron.
But, well, I like James Spader.
I was going to say, that's more realistic. Okay.
Okay. All right, so we're kind of running a little bit long here, so let's start wrapping things up. So final general thoughts on Captain Marvel. So Birdman, let's start with you. Final thoughts?
Final thoughts. This is a good addition to the MCU. Not one of the strongest entries. Like, I wouldn't put this in my top 10 of all the, like, 19 or 20 movies that are in the MCU. Definitely top. I'd put this at 11 because I think it's just, it's good, but it didn't blow me away like I wanted it to. That being said, though, was a solid film, 7 out of 10. Love the character. Brie Larson is Captain Marvel, as far as I'm concerned. Goose the Cat is going to be a very popular cat name for the next year. And I can't wait to see what some of the merchandising of this movie will come out, because the Marvel Legends stuff is fantastic. But do yourself a favor. Go see this movie. Before Endgame, because you're going to want to see what this powerhouse is capable of doing.
Okay. Kat?
Thank God for this film, because finally we have a female superhero who isn't just wearing, like, a cat suit. So, like, there's a variety of outfits that she wears in a single film that you can cosplay, and, like, there's some casual shit where you can go, like, full Captain Marvel, and it's, like, a nice spectrum of things to wear. So maybe, like, come Halloween, there might be some cool, like, pre-made outfits for those who want to cosplay, because it's a big enough film and she's a big enough character that there's going to be some, like, halfway decent costumes out at, like, a Halloween store. So first off, that's important, because cosplay is important. But also, I really enjoyed this film quite a lot. I didn't really have too many problems with it. I really will be devastated if they don't bring this cat back in for something. Especially because it's an alien and we need it to come back in. Somebody suggested that the solution to everything in the next film is they time travel back in time somehow, and then Goose just eats the Infinity Gauntlet. And I'm on board. I'm 100% for this. I'm stoked to see the next film and to see how Captain Marvel plays in to everybody else, how she's going to interact, because she's, like, the new kid on the block who hasn't been a part of the Avengers yet. And she's seeing this group of people at the worst time of their life. And I think it's going to make for a very interesting character dynamic with all these established characters, having this sort of the new girl in town come in and be this probably a big shining light of sunshine like she is. So I think she's just gonna accelerate Infinity War or Endgame into just an even better film. I'm super stoked.
Okay. My final general thoughts. excuse me. Kind of echoing what Birdman said, yeah, this definitely isn't in the top 10 of the Marvel films. It's definitely a shallower film than I was sold on, but it's still a really enjoyable popcorn movie, and definitely worth seeing at least once. You know, a lot of fun moments. Just the banter between Carol and Nick Fury was just the highlight of this movie, and I'm really excited to see more of these two together. But definitely a really fun film, and definitely something that's worth seeing. So now comes the part of the show where we give our final ratings on the film. As always, our ratings are from best to worst. See it now, wait for matinee, wait for DVD, wait for cable, don't even bother, and Brian's rating, fuck this movie. So Kat, what's your final rating for Captain Marvel?
Go see this movie. If you want to see Avengers, you kind of have to. So even if you're not sold on it, if you're not sold on it completely, just like go to a matinee. But if you love MCU films, you will love this film. So go see it now.
Okay. Birdman, what about you?
I'm definitely going to say go and see it. You don't necessarily have to pay full price if you don't want to, but definitely see it. You've got a month and a half. There's no reason. No, a month. You've got just over a month to go see this. You've got no reason not to. Trust me, it's going to be worth your time and money.
Okay, and I'm gonna say wait for matinee. It's like I said, it's definitely enjoyable. You know, it's not a masterpiece by any stretch, but it is definitely an enjoyable popcorn movie. There are some plot issues that, you know, like I said, I just had trouble getting past, but I still had a lot of fun with this movie. So that's gonna be my final rating, is wait for matinee. So, and with that, that is all the time that we have for Nerd of the Third Power this week. Thank you so much for tuning in. Come back next week where we discuss Voltron Season 8, the final season of our 2 year long now Voltron journey, where we say goodbye to these characters that we've known and loved for so long. But yeah, as always, thank you for tuning in. We'll see you guys next week. I'm Dr. Gonzo.
I'm the Cat.
I'm Birdman.
We'll see you next week. Taka, play us out.
Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive's Employee of the Month, 2 months in a row. Leave a message at the... Hi, Jamie. It's me, Jamie. I just had a new idea for our song about the Name Your Price tool. So when it's like, tell us what you want to pay, hey, 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 and the trombone goes, blah, 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 and you say, we'll help you find coverage options to fit your budget. Then we just all do finger snaps while a choir goes, savings coming at ya, savings coming at ya. Yes? No? Maybe? Anyway, see you at practice tonight. I got new lyrics for the rap break.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The Starlight Lounge presents An Evening with the Progressive Box.
The moon. Yeah. That's Hugo tickling the ivories. He just saved by bundling home and auto with Progressive. Gonna finally buy a ring for that gal of yours, Hugo? Send her my condolences. Hi-oh! This next one's for you, too. There's a burglar in my heart. Thank you.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Discounts not available in all states or situations.